Good morning, Los Angeles. Today is Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017. The time is 10:15 a.m. and you're tuned in to kpcradio.com. My name is Thort. I'm going to be your host for this next upcoming installment of Center Stage. Now, today we have a true musical renaissance man joining me in the studio here at Pierce College. Originally from the Midwest, today's guest became an Angeleno and planted his feet in the music industry. He's been working as a musician, a singer, songwriter, producer. He owns his own studio, and he's got a new EP coming out, which I want to talk about just a little bit. And he's also got a couple of shows coming up as well. I'm here with Steve McCormick. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Thorpe. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for coming in, especially early. I say this a lot, but it's sometimes hard to get musicians in before noon.
Hey, I got a new baby, so I'm up at the crack of dawn every day.
Well, I can feel that.
Yeah.
So before we get into all the new stuff, I want to get just like a little bit of history about, get to know you a little bit, I guess is the best way to put it.
Cool.
Excuse me. So where are you from originally? Where were you born?
I was born in Evanston, Illinois, and after moving around a little bit with my dad because he was in the Navy in the 60s, way back then when I came into the world, we settled in Waukesha, Wisconsin, which is outside of Milwaukee, sort of between Milwaukee and Madison, and it's known as the home of Les Paul. So they call Les Paul. They called Les Paul the Wizard of Waukesha, and now they call me the Wizard of Waukesha.
Well, after listening to you just kind of playing around before we went on the air, I believe it.
Thanks, Thorpe.
It's known for being Les Paul, so did you play a lot of Gibsons when you were growing up?
I did. We all coveted Gibsons. I never actually had a Les Paul. I had another one that he designed called the SG, which...
Yeah.
Pete Townsend made famous because you could smash them really easily.
I have a couple of cool stories about that we can talk about in just
okay.
a minute.
All right.
How long have you been playing music?
Oh, as long as I can remember. I started out playing piano when I was a kid and then rebelled around age 11 and went right to electric guitar and then eventually came back to piano. So I still do that as well, but I play a lot of different styles of guitar and pretty much been part of my life.
That's a pretty common thing I find with musicians. Everybody starts out with piano because the parents want them to, and then something like a guitar catches the eye and they kind of stray.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, and it's up to the parents how they feel about it. I mean, the guitar most parents are okay with, but it's the drums that kills a lot of people.
True that. True that.
So the guitar was like the main draw instrument for you then?
Yeah, that's what really got me into the music business, was my downfall, so to speak.
So when did you decide that you wanted to stay in music professionally or start working in music professionally?
Well, I started writing songs before I was out of high school, so I think I had the bug pretty badly then. But then I tried to make a go of it in college, and I thought I might be an engineer because I was pretty good at math and physics and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I quickly got outpaced by the serious engineers when I was in college, and after a couple of years, I pretty much had to make a decision, and I figured out a way to major in music.
So you did actually, you changed over to having a music career in college.
Yeah.
And then, so what happened after college?
Then I went to college in Minnesota, so I moved up to Minneapolis. It seemed like a good idea. There's a, you know, Prince was there and Flight Time Productions, and it was kind of like a hot music city, hotter than Milwaukee or Chicago would have been a good option as well, but I just kind of found myself in Minneapolis, lived there till I couldn't bear the winters anymore, and then I discovered Venice Beach and came out here on a one-way ticket and pretty much never left.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you, I was reading a little bit on your bio, fresh out of college, you started working with I guess he was called the microphone guru or something along those lines.
So yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that. Like, did that help kind of hone your music skills a little bit, or did it influence you in some way?
Yeah, I mean, he really did, you know, I've always been interested in good, you know, audiophile sound. I think I got that from my dad, who always had like good stereos when we were growing up. But yeah, I met this guy, Steve McKinstry, whose wife was a professor at the college that I went to, Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota. And he had a little studio there. She's like, you got to go meet my husband. So I started hanging out with him, and he really opened my eyes to things like tube microphones and, you know, really good compressors and mic preamps and stuff like that. So, yeah.
So, and after you worked with him, what happened next?
I mean, well,
was there like a transition period before Venice, like in between there and before Venice?
Oh yeah, I mean, there were some years there. I mean, he was recording everything on tape. This is like, you know, the early days of recording. So the idea of having my own studio like I do now was just something I didn't really fathom at the time. So I played in a lot of bands in the Minneapolis area, and I started being managed by a guy who recognized my songwriting potential, and then I got a publishing deal with a publishing company out of St. Paul, Minnesota, but that also had offices in Nashville, and so I sort of embarked on a songwriting career there for a little while, and, you know, did the publishing thing. So, you know, and then it wasn't until I was out here, you know, maybe 10 years later before it became possible to record with computers and stuff like that. And then I saw my opportunity to go into the studio business.
Very cool. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit too. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I want to talk about is you kind of created your own style of music, from what I've kind of gathered.
Thank you.
A lot of people seem to be really interested in it. And you've been all over the place. So what did you do, or what kind of, what's the best way to say this? What elements did you put into your own music that makes it a little bit different from everybody else's?
Well, it's interesting. It seems like a complicated question, but it's really kind of really kind of simple. My major in college was American studies, and I just really love American music, whether it's jazz or bluegrass, or, you know, soul, R&B. So I just, I've always loved all those different, you know, genres of American music, and I just kind of cherry-picked the little aspects of it that I've loved the best, and kind of mashed it all up, and
yeah, you just kind of blend everything together and get something really cool at the end of it.
Yeah.
So who were some of, like, if you had them all? We kind of talked about this too, but do you have like a top five, or just some of like your favorite major influences? I know you threw a couple genres. Do you have a couple artists that you
I would say like New Orleans music, like the Neville Brothers or the Meters. Out here in California, there were bands like Little Feet that influenced me a lot. I had my Grateful Dead period also, which is a great Americana band. Really, you could argue the first true Americana band.
Deadhead.
Yeah, sure, I had my Deadhead years. I don't mind saying. I survived.
And so you also just mentioned that you landed a publishing deal.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the company was called Rensong. It's kind of an interesting story, because the grandfather of the company is this guy named Ren Geyer, who's known for inventing the Nerf ball and the Twister game. So he cut his teeth on that kind of marketing thing. But he had a big family, and a couple of his kids went into publishing, and they were really just trying to build catalog at the time. So they saw me as a somebody they were going to try to get signed to a record deal. So they just wanted me to write, and they just wanted to add songs to their catalog that they thought down the road would generate, you know, income for them. So that's kind of how that process went. And, you know, they got a couple of my songs cut by some other people, but they were really sort of investing in me to bring my music to a greater audience, and then they would have the publishing on all my stuff.
And that's really cool.
Yeah.
And did that start back in the Midwest, and is that kind of what pushed you to LA, or was there?
It did. You know, they were, you know, they would have been happier if I'd moved to Nashville, quite honestly. But they had an office here, and they were interested in trying to get into the LA music scene. So they, when I first came out here, that's where I stayed, was with them in this little apartment that they had in Studio City.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you're you have a lot of different, I guess, credentials is a good way to put it. As I mentioned in the intro, there's a couple of them that I think some people would, kind of like myself, want to know what the difference is between some of them. Like you're listed as being a session player and a composer / songwriter. What entails being like a session player, and how is that different from being just like a regular singer song? Not that regular is a bad word, but
no, I understand the question perfectly well. Well, you know, after I moved out to LA, I found myself playing in a lot of different bands, and I play a lot of different styles of guitar. So then I started to get calls to play in sessions, and mostly it was TV commercials. So I had a pretty good run in the late '90s doing TV commercials. Those are my early session years. So I would get called to, play on TV commercials, a few TV themes as well, and then on other people's records as well.
Yeah, I mean, your resume on your website is pretty impressive.
Thank you.
I saw the one page that says everything that you're credited with, and it goes on forever. It has a pretty cool group of mixture of people and places. And what are some of the major sessions that you did for TV? Like, for example, for TV.
Well, I played the theme on the TV show Felicity back in the day, and a couple of my songs were in the NBC's Homicide show. This might seem like distant memories for your audience, but. And then in the jingle world, I was all over the place, but one of my most famous ones that's kind of fun to talk about was the Cialis commercial. I pretty much branded that product, and I played both guitar and bass on that piece of music. So
Cialis commercial. Well, yeah. I have to imagine that you had a little bit of fun with that one, right?
Yeah, that's been pretty humorous little party favor ever since.
Some people don't really care for writing jingle. I mean, do you have fun doing it? I mean, at least with the Cialis one, I'm sure you probably did, but.
Well, I wasn't, I was the session guitar player. So luckily for me, because I think I've seen that business kind of steal people's souls, but I wasn't the composer. Although lots of times the composer that hired me would, ask me to help write a spot. But I would just kind of, I could keep my distance from it. He'd call me, I was 5 minutes away, tell me what the vibe was. I'd show up with a guitar and I could be in and out in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like I was really having to 9-to-5 it, so to speak.
It was just a good, fun way to kind of keep things going while you were trying
it was good money at the time, and, it wasn't the only thing I wanted to do, so it was cool to get called to do that, and it kept some checks rolling in, and got you sort of in the system and made some other things possible.
Yeah. So after you had done your session writing and you got your Cialis commercial and you got a couple of other things, is that kind of what led you to start? To open up your own studio. You have your own studio now.
Right? Exactly. Well, that jingle company was recording on computers, and it just it was, and they could move really quickly, which was something that was not possible back in the tape days. So, and you could buy a nice computer and some hardware and be into it for under $10,000 rather than having to take out another mortgage on a tape machine or something like that, So once I saw that possibility, I started recording, and then I came back around to some of the stuff I'd learned with Steve McKinstry about tube microphones and stuff like that. I started building my own gear.
Oh, that's cool.
Which, so even though I wasn't recording on tape, I was paying a lot of attention to the signal path, and from the microphone, right up to the point where it hits the computer, I pay a lot of attention to that.
Well, yeah, having a really sweet sound is really important.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we do radio and you do music. I mean, a good microphone is kind of everything.
It really is, you know, and I hope we don't lose sight of that, you know, in the days of earbuds and listening on iPhones and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, the competition is kind of steep now because you can record almost anything on like the new iPhones or even just a new cell phone, really.
It's pretty awesome, and there are, you know, it's got its place, but there we should not lose sight of, you know, the real thing.
Yeah, I still definitely prefer to be in a studio.
Yeah,
this is heaven to me.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I can go out anywhere and record a spot on my phone and have it be, you know, a fairly decent quality that's publishable, but nothing beats coming in here and hanging out with people in a real sound space and just having a good time.
Yeah, no, and a great, you know, you think of the great radio voices, you know, you get up close to that microphone and, you know, like Wolfman Jack and, you know, people like that over the years, you know, there really is a sound, even, you know, just with what you're doing, DJing on a radio station.
Yeah, you lose the richness of the voice on a cell phone. I mean, no matter how close you can get to it. I don't like to listen to the sound. I don't like to listen to my stuff because I think I sound weird. Everybody else seems to like it, but I just kind of...
Oh, you got a great radio voice. Yeah.
Well, thank you. So how long have you had your studio now?
Oh, boy. So I'd say we're going on 20 years. It might not be quite 20 years, but well over a decade.
And other than catering to your own passion projects, do you work with other people producing and mixing and mastering, or?
I do all of that. I tend to like not to want to do, you know, if I record something, then I'm going to send it to somebody else and have somebody else master it. But I've mastered projects that have been recorded elsewhere, and I love working on other people's music. And I sort of focused on that for a while, and now I'm kind of getting back. And then, you know, was always complaining about not having time to work on my own stuff. So now I'm kind of putting my money where my mouth was and trying to get back to my own music a little bit.
Yeah, well, I can, you know, I totally get it. But it is fun to work and help other people out. Like, I love to do that myself. But at the end of the day, I mean, you still got to take care of you. And who are some of the, if you know, have you had a lot of cool people come through that you've done music for? Anybody that we would know, I guess, is a good way to...
Well, you know, in this audience in L.A., you know, you'll know some of the people I'll mention. Michael Sherwood, who was the jingle composer that used to hire me. I produced his record, and that was actually recorded on tape, so that was one of the earlier projects that I did here in L.A. Just recently, Amelia K. Spicer, I co-produced her record, and it just hit last week, and it's a real masterpiece, a great record, and I'm pretty proud of that, and took a long time coming, and happy that that record is out. There's a guy named Phil Cody who had a deal with Interscope for a few years, and I toured with him, and I've made a couple records with him over the last couple years. One of them is called Cody Sings Zevon, where he sings all Warren Zevon songs, and then his own record. I did both of those.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So obviously you've got quite a really, really impressive past. Everything that you have accomplished. I mean, your music, your studio, your placements, your session playing, everything. Now we can talk about today. You have a new EP coming out.
Yes, I do.
And tell me a little bit about it.
Well, like I started saying, I sort of had a bunch of stuff in the can, so to speak, in the studio that I'd been working on over the last, I don't even want to tell you how long, but let's just say over the last little while. And so I started collecting those songs together and trying to pick the very best ones, and I'm not very good at editing down my list, so I wound up with 15 songs, so 15 breaks up nicely into three bunches of five, so I decided to release three EPs, and it's going to be kind of like three different chapters, and then we'll sweep them all together and put out a greater novel at the end of that process.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Tell me, give us a little bit of an idea of what the music is like and what the process was like.
Well, the music I would just generally describe as Americana. It's like true to my roots, you know. Some of it sounds Appalachian or bluegrassy, or I play a lot of slide guitar. Some of it sounds maybe like Rye Cooter. Some of it sounds a little New Orleans-y. Some of it sounds like Chicago blues. So I like to say there's two kinds of music, good and bad, and I do good.
And one more time, just when is the EP coming out? What's it going to be called?
It's coming out on May 19th. It's going to be called The Tripping Years, and it's which is a lyric from one of my songs on that EP, a song called Hello Hello, which we're not going to listen to today, but that's where the lyric comes from, or that's where the title of the EP comes from. So yeah, The Tripping Years.
Well, very cool. So you have your guitar here, your really cool guitar, by the way.
Thank you.
It's got a really great sound to it. I wish you guys could see it, because it's definitely a great piece of musical technology, but it's a great looking instrument.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got a really cool sound to it. Do you want to play? We have one queued up, a pre-recorded song, but I want you to play something live. So what do you want to play live?
Yeah, we're going to do a song called Say the Word. And this is on The Tripping Years, and it sounds pretty close to what I'll do in studio today. I use this guitar, and it's just, I think there's me and a bass player on the recording, maybe a little keyboard thing thrown in there. But anyway, it allows me to play slide in a cool tuning. This is in a D minor tuning, which is not that common. So
I love playing with different kind of tunings. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
But for right now, Steve McCormick on KPC Radio. Take it away.
Thanks, Thorpe. Say a word, little hummingbird, and hope the lines don't get blurred. And if your speech has not been slurred, the meaning will have been inferred. Go on, say the word, little hummingbird. No money ever be transferred, none nor debt ever be incurred. Just say the word, sweet hummingbird. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Hummingbird running out of time. Such a short attention span. Hummingbird, I can read your mind, and it says catch me if you can. Span. hummingbird, I can read your mind. And it says, catch me if you can. Yeah, you say the word, little hummingbird, and your little wings done did flitter. And then, oh my God, what did occur? 'Cause you said the word, sweet hummingbird. Yeah, you said the word, little hummingbird, and my passion, it was surely stirred. 'Cause I am a man, won't be deterred if you say the word, sweet hummingbird. Da 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 da.
I absolutely love that.
Thank you.
I mean, there's something so cool about just slide guitar, and I totally see what you're getting at when you say a kind of Appalachian style of music. Like just the beginning of the song, I picture the Smoky Mountains rolling over.
There you go.
And sitting there with, you know, like a jug of just some corn mash and pecking at me good time.
Exactly.
That's really cool, man. Yeah. I totally dig that. So I have another song queued up. Do you mind if we go back to back? I want to keep everybody.
Yeah, let's listen to the studio cut.
So we got a studio cut. This track is called My Oh My, and you do have some backing vocals or just some accompanying vocals with somebody
else on the track. This song I wrote with Amelia Spicer, whose record I just mentioned, her new record, Wow and Flutter, just hit the streets last week. Great record. Wrote it with her. She's on there singing background vocals. I also have Heather Donovan, who is a fine, fine singer we just added on this track. And Daryl Johnson, who played with the Neville Brothers, is singing vocals on there. So it's a big vocal thing. And let's check it out.
All right, here we go. This is My Oh My, Steve McCormick on KPC Radio. Let's take it away.
That'd be too much for me, and I couldn't reply. So you'll never kiss me, the tears in your eyes. My, oh my, oh my, my, how it changes when you come along. My, how the strangers, things don't seem wrong. My, how the voices I hear become songs. Oh my, oh my, oh my.
KPCRadio.com. I'm in studio with the artist, Steve McCormick. Great music, man.
Thanks, Thorpe.
You know, we were talking off the air while you guys were listening about just the EP that's coming out and how everything's going to be a musical journey, which I totally see that. And it's like I told you just now, and I'm going to repeat it for everybody else, but the intro to your last song, I mean, it took me somewhere, you know. The style of the music definitely paints an image in your head, and I love that.
Well, that's a success story then. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, to be able to close your eyes while listening to something and go somewhere else, I think, is like the best thing about music.
Yeah, exactly.
So we talked about the EP. You have a couple of shows coming up here in GTLA, or the greater Los Angeles area.
Yeah.
Tell me, or tell everybody what your schedule's like. Is
okay, well, May 13th is the first of them, and it's going to be in Topanga, relatively close to here, at a place called Corazon, if I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Performing Arts. It's right in downtown Topanga proper, and it's a neat little space, and we're going to play my own music there, and also a band called Studebaker that's kind of a funk cover band that I play with, so that's a double bill. That's going to be real fun, coming right up here on May 13th. And then May 20th, we're going to take over Santa Monica Playhouse Theater, which is right, it's on 4th Street, right off the promenade there. It's a neat space. I've done a few shows there before. I really like renting out that space. I can bring in my own sound and really get a high-quality presentation of what I'm trying to do. So that's the big release show, because the EP is going to be officially released on the 19th, which is the Friday right before that show. So May 20th at Santa Monica Playhouse Theater. And then a couple weeks later, with Carlos, who you were just mentioning, we're going to do a show in Hollywood at Molly Malone's on June 10th. So... and with the actor Rob Morrow, who just recently had a cameo in the little O.J. Simpson series that was on Netflix, and is perhaps better known for being the star of Northern Exposure back in the day. So that's going to be a lot of fun, too. And I got the David Schwartz, who wrote the theme for the Northern Exposure show, is going to be playing bass with me that night,
Cool,
so that's going to be kind of a throwback Northern Exposure show.
And I'll definitely throw up all the info for all the shows up on our website.
Appreciate that.
And just before we go, one more time, I want to plug the EP. It's going to be Steve McCormick. The title of the EP
is The Tripping Years.
The Tripping Years, yeah. Which I think is really cool also. I mean, I'm looking forward to listening to the whole thing because I'm ready to go somewhere else with the music.
I can't wait to hear your feedback on it, Thorpe.
It's going to be coming out on May 19th. Where's it going to come out?
Well, we'll have it up on iTunes and Spotify and all the usual stuff, but CD Baby, you know, you can track me down on Facebook and any number of different ways.
Right on.
Yeah.
So everybody keep eyes and ears out for the EP coming out on the 19th, and I'll definitely keep you guys posted, and I'll remember to send out some notifications so you guys can get your hands on it. We are out of time. We've been on, you know, it's been great having you in here. It was really great to meet you. I absolutely love the music. I love everything that you're doing, and I can't wait to see what's next. I mean, this is really cool.
Thanks, Thorpe. Yeah. Really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
And hope I'm going to try, if I can, to come out and see one of these shows. I mean,
You won't be sorry.
I'm there. I'm already there.
All right, cool.
Thank you again, Steve. For everybody who's listening out there, my name's Thorpe for KPCRadio.com. You've been listening to Center Stage. We're signing off, and we'll see you next time.